Israeli forces killed 3 Palestinians near Nablus, raising to more than 80 the number of people they shot dead in the occupied West Bank this year. Iran says its oil exports have increased to their highest level since the U.S. reimposed sanctions on the country 4 years ago. The BBC is in hot water after suspending one of its sports presenters who accused the British government of using Nazi-era rhetoric in its immigration policy. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Israeli forces have shot dead 3 more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. That brings to 82 the number of people killed by Israeli soldiers and settlers this year. Our correspondent Ramana tells us more about that.
Israeli soldiers from the Golani, Brigade had deployed near the Israeli military checkpoint of Surra, West Nablus, when there had been clashes between Palestinian fighters there and the Israeli soldiers at that area. They claimed that Palestinian fighters opened fire at Israeli soldiers and a military position there. And then the Israeli forces succeeded to murder 3 Palestinian fighters and wounded a 4th and had taken him for investigation. The identity of the 4 Palestinians, including the 3 who had been killed, had not been revealed yet. The Palestinian Ministry of Health didn't confirm if it's true 3 Palestinians had been killed or not. This is an Israeli military statement who confirmed that the Israeli soldiers killed the 3 Palestinians this morning near Nablus and wounded and arrested a 4th Palestinian there. Anyways, the Palestinians in the city of Nablus had declared a day of mourning there and a general strike, but the identity of the 4 Palestinians had not been revealed yet.
Iran says that its oil exports have reached their highest level since the U.S. reimposed sanctions on the country 4 years ago. Oil ministry is saying that Iran exported 83 million more barrels in the past 11 months compared to the same period the year before. Javad Oji says this also represents 190 million more oil barrels exported compared to 2 years ago. The ministry attributed the spike to exploiting all the capacities, marketing, and modified contracts. In 2018, Washington reimposed sanctions on Tehran after unilaterally withdrawing from the 2015 agreement known as the JCPOA. A movie that unveils the misinformation campaign against Iran has been screened in central Rome. The movie is trying to elucidate the myths and popular misconceptions surrounding Iran as described by most Western media outlets.
On Saturday, a film called Target Iran was screened at a cinema in the Italian capital, not far from the iconic Colosseum. The film debunks misinformation and false claims about Iran, which the director of the movie, senior journalist Fulvio Grimaldi, describes as a country which is determined to maintain its serenity in the international system. Former BBC reporter Grimaldi has visited Iran many times in the past years, gaining a profound knowledge of the Iranian society.
I have traveled across Iran. I know the country very well. Its people, its women, its workers, its professionals. Iran is a lively place with great dignity, a country which foreign forces constantly try to destabilize. Iran does not bend, does not conform. That's why imperialistic powers cannot stand it.
The film Target Iran elucidates how, since the 1979 revolution, Iran has often been the target of smear campaigns orchestrated by governments and intelligence agencies in an attempt to topple the Islamic Republic. In his work, Grimaldi also explains how unjustified sanctions have affected the lives of Iranians throughout the years, with severe repercussions on the country's economy and healthcare system.
Iran, together with the other BRICS countries, bugs NATO and the US. In response, lies on Iran are what go around in most Western media. People here want to know what the truth is.
The Italian media, the Western media, have always been biased against Iran. It is not true what the media say, that the situation of Iranian women is dire, that they are the target of repression by authorities. People at the screening tonight want to know the truth.
There is like an oppressive blanket of clouds on our information. Important truths have been kept from us. It is crucial that we know what's going on for real.
Grimaldi's film also presents Iran's great history through various time periods and rulers.
Recently, an increasing number of Italians have started to question the reliability of the media, particularly that of mainstream broadcasters and the press. Today, more than ever, people accurately choose their sources of information, as many no longer believe everything they see on the news is the truth. Max Civili, Rome.
Israel has launched fresh air raids in Syria, this time targeting western and central provinces of Tartus and Hama. Syrian military is saying that the air defenses intercepted some of those missiles. The attack left three Syrian army personnel wounded and some material damage. Israel frequently performs aerial attacks on Syria. Damascus says it reserves the right to respond. It's repeatedly complained to the UN, urging the international body to take action against Tel Aviv's aggression. More than a decade of Western attempts to overthrow the democratically elected Syrian government has failed. And that, according to the leader of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, Syed Hassan Nasrallah. But he says that the West continues with its agenda to marginalize President al-Assad by stopping Arab countries' efforts to normalize relations with Damascus.
Almost a decade since foreign-backed terrorists in Syria tried to pull the country into chaos, it seems an all-out war against Damascus has failed. That's according to the Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah. In a meeting with a large group of influential figures from various Arab and Islamic countries, Syed Hassan Nasrallah asserted that many Arab states intend to normalize ties with Syria, but the United States opposes such moves. The Hezbollah chief stressed that Syria's real enemy is the United States, which is going ahead with its war and blockade against Damascus. He argued that Syria has been targeted by a U.S.-led scheme over its rejection to subdue to Washington. He pointed out that Washington's sanction measures against Damascus are failing with the help of the people and Syria's regional allies. In the televised address, Nasrallah hailed Syria for lying in the heart of a powerful axis of resistance, noting that there is confidence that the Arab country would remain at the forefront of the struggle to stand against the West. Nasrallah stressed that Syria's resistance disrupted all equations throughout the entire region. The Hezbollah leader also tied the security of Syria to its neighboring countries, namely Lebanon. He said what happens in Syria and Palestine is reflected directly on the regional countries and has a strong impact on Lebanon in particular. The prominent figure said speaking about the present and future of Syria is like speaking about the present and future of Lebanon. He noted that if Daesh terrorists, who had seized large swathes of land in Syria and Iraq from 2014 to 2017, had remained in the region, it would have affected Lebanon as well.
Now, the remarks of Syed Hassan Nasrallah come as Syria is standing firm against the Western pressure. The years-long conflict has not managed to stop the government from rebuilding the country. The administration of President Bashar al-Assad has also made all it can to facilitate the return of refugees back home after more than a decade of foreign-backed militancy.
The comments by Hezbollah leader comes as many countries, especially those in the Arab world, are gradually turning towards Syria by normalizing relations with the Arab country. Countries like the United Arab Emirates, Jordan and Oman are among those who have recently restored their relations with Damascus. To add to the list is Tunisia, with President Rais Said announcing plans to fully restore ties with Syria, which was once cut off more than a decade ago. Needless to say that many of those countries join hand in hand with Western nations to sow division in Syria. They also helped the West impose an all-out economic sanction and blockade on Damascus. As Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad has numerously said, hegemonic countries had implemented straitjacketed agendas, invested in terrorism, and put economies in a stranglehold with no regard for international law. Miqdad brands what he calls smart sanctions as a form of collective punishment against the Syrian people who are deprived of access to food, fuel, medications, and other basic necessities. As part of sanctions, the Western world has left no stone unturned to isolate Syria. But to what extent has that scheme been successful? Since the crisis in 2011, Syria has favored dialogue even with the opposition to support national reconciliation and stability. Moreover, Damascus has facilitated the return of millions of refugees who once escaped a foreign-backed militancy from Syria. The Syrian government has also made all its efforts to rebuild the country after large swathes of its land were devastated by terrorist acts. From the military perspective, President Bashar al-Assad, with the support of Iran and Russia, has emerged victorious from the years-long conflict. That could especially be highlighted when the Syrian government managed to retake almost all the territory it lost to foreign-backed terrorists. All in all, what seems to be of high significance is the fact that Syria, with the help of its allies, is managing to stand firm against the West's threats. From partitioning the Arab country to plundering the country's oil, Syria is doing whatever it can to resist against the West. That's exactly what the Hezbollah leader termed as failure of the West in its war on Damascus.
Ukraine and Russia are both claiming to have killed hundreds of enemy troops in a single day of fighting for control over the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. A Ukraine military spokesperson says more than 220 Russian soldiers were killed in the town on Saturday. Then we have the Russian Defense Ministry saying that 210 Ukrainian troopers got killed in the wider Donetsk region. The fighting in Donetsk is now focusing on Bakhmut, and there a small river dividing the town was reportedly the new front line. And that after pro-Russia forces advanced on its eastern side. Capturing Bakhmut has been a key objective of Moscow, which gives Russian forces control over almost the entire Donbas region. But Ukraine says that its forces are holding the Russian offensive back. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of Athens as anger is mounting over Greece's deadliest train disaster. Protesters are mostly university students. They say that the government repeatedly ignored calls by railway unions to improve safety systems. Greece's largest labor unions have geared up for a nationwide strike on March 16. 2 weeks ago, a passenger train collided head-on with a cargo train in central Greece. At least 57 people were killed in that crash, many of them students. The government says that human error is to blame. The tragedy has triggered daily nationwide rallies that usually turn violent. The BBC's director general says that he won't resign after a backlash to the removal of Gary Lineker, the popular host of the broadcaster's Cornerstone soccer program. Tim Davies says, "The situation should be resolved calmly." Lineker was suspended after accusing the UK government of using Nazi-era rhetoric in its new immigration policy. His ouster set off a staff boycott, which forced BBC to curtail major portions of its weekend sports coverage. Many politicians and public figures have slammed the move, accusing the state-funded broadcaster of buckling to the demands of the ruling Conservatives. Moving on, leader of the world's largest trade union organization has been removed from his post over links to European Parliament graft scandal. Luca Vincentini was briefly detained in December after initial inquiry into the case. The ITUC general secretary admitted receiving €50,000 from lobbyist Pierre Panzeri, who allegedly ran a bribery ring. The ITUC initially suspended Vicentini, but has now decided he no longer has the confidence of the General Council. In December, Belgian police more than 1.5 million euros in cash during raids around Brussels and arrested six suspects, including Panzeri and then Parliamentary Vice President Eva Kaili. Prosecutors say they have traced the money back to Qatar and Morocco, but both countries insist that they played no role in this scandal. China has named a general as its new defense minister as tensions remain high between China and the U.S. Parliament overwhelmingly approved the Li Shangfu's nomination for the new cabinet. Li has been under U.S. sanctions since 2018 over the purchase of combat aircraft and equipment from Russia. The 65-year-old is an aerospace engineer and the son of a high-ranking army commander. His promotion follows a warning by the Chinese foreign minister that there will surely be a conflict with the U.S. unless Washington changes course. China-U.S. relations have been their lowest in decades, with the two countries at odds over everything from trade to human rights to territorial issues. The public analyst Kendo Xu says the United States is to blame for any problem caused by sanctions on the Chinese defense minister, and it should resolve that issue.
People talked about, for example, part of the background, General Li Shangfu, our defense minister, was sanctioned by the United States in 2018 for purchasing like a Su-35 and this S-400 anti-aircraft missile system from Russia. The thing is, you know, people say this created the problem. I mean, the problem was created by the United States. The U.S. has to do something to make an exception, for example, if they want to deal with the Chinese side in a serious manner. This was not unprecedented. Remember when the Indian Prime Minister Mr. Modi became Prime Minister, he was also under the U.S. sanctions, and the U.S. has to make room to deal with a national leader. So this is a mistake by the United States. Countries like China and India or Russia, they have no duty to follow the U.S. Sanctions. You know, unilateral sanctions and national sanctions is not from the UN, remember? So I think his appointment has little to do with China-U.S. relations. But when it comes to this relationship, it's really up to Washington to stop provoking China, to stop provoking a military conflict, for example, over Taiwan, if not a war, in the upcoming years.
And with this, we come to the end of this news bulletin from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Muhammad, the son of Abdullah.
Part 1.
Religions appeared one after another. All of them represented one God, one path, one origin, and one end to mankind. Every messenger who was appointed by God to convey his message informed the people of the advent of the last prophet of God. In this sense, Buddha and Krishna said the very same thing which Noah, Abraham, Moses, John, Zoroaster, and Jesus said. One told the name of the final prophet, and the other spoke of his origin. One forecast the signs of his homeland, while the other described the characteristics of his language. In one way or another, each prophet informed mankind of the joyous news of the advent of the final prophet, the last messenger of the heavens. In the very beginning of history, God sent Adam, his first prophet on earth, to propagate and show the heavenly path to the inhabitants of this world. Thousands of years have passed ever since, and some people continue to follow him by residing exclusively near the riverbanks of the world. Zoroastrianism is one of the most ancient religions of the world. These days, most of its followers are found in Iran, India, and some regions of Central Asia. They possess a heritage several thousand years old. Like the prophets before him, Zoroaster also informed his followers of the coming of divine prophets. The religious scripts of Zoroastrianism refer to these messengers as Sotians. There are three Sotians who were foretold to appear after the Zoroaster. Alternatively, three Sotians, three beneficent personalities, will come one after the other. Throughout history, the followers of Zoroaster have been waiting for their arrival. They have searched for them everywhere.
Attilo! What brings you here?
We are visitors from the east. We follow the star. The star of the prophecy.
The prophecy of the Messiah?
The Messiah!
So far, only three Zoroastrian sages have succeeded in seeing the first Sotiant in Bethlehem. When the last prophet of God appeared in Hejaz, there were many Zoroastrians who saw the signs of the second Sotiant in him. They joined him in large numbers and became his followers and helpers. However, there are still many Zoroastrians who are keenly waiting for the arrival of the third Sotiant. They hope that this universal reformer will appear and make the world a utopia. In India, the land of many creeds, there are several mysterious religions spread out in the vast jungles and mountainous regions. You find religions such as Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. Though in some case, the followers of these religions have become deviated from the right path. The depth of meaning and spirituality that these religions reveal is indicative of man's inherent tendency to establish a close relationship with an infallible creator and worship him. Historical roots of Hinduism are spread over thousands of years. Mysterious ascetics with wonderful conducts live all over India, in colorful shrines and dark temples in legendary jungles. They make the unspeakable things of this mysterious land even more mysterious.
God is one only. Even in India, in the Hindu philosophy, God is always one. But his manifestation is many.
This historical religion has several holy books as guidelines for its followers. These books are full of strange and unsaid mysteries. Among the sacred books of Hindus are the Puranas. These ancient books contain the history of the universe, the genealogy of kings and heroes, and the foretelling of future events. In these books, we again witness indications of the coming of a spiritual teacher called Muhammad from a foreign land. To him is what Raja Bhuj respectfully says, "I prostrate myself before you, O you, the pride of mankind, the inhabitant of Arabia. You have gathered a great power to eradicate Satan."
In one of the Puranas in India, Bhavishya Purana, it is also mentioned that Mahamud, Paigambar Muhammad, will be born in the Middle East and he would cleanse the people of corruption and bad habits there, and, you know, he will bring a new wave of devotion. This is mentioned thousands of years ago in the Hindu texts, in a Purana. It's one verse is there, one quote is there, that such and such a person, a prediction was done about that.
He will appear in a sandy desert in the land of Arabia. He will be known as the pride of humanity, and his name is Muhammad. What could be the secret that has been also mentioned in the holy books of Hindus, and of which the Hindu monks have spoken? The history of Jainism goes back about 600 years before the appearance of Christ. According to Jainism, salvation can only be achieved through the practice of asceticism. The tenets of this faith dictate that God has 24 avatars on earth. The last one of them will be born in a peninsula, and the name of his father is Vishnu Bhagat, which is the equivalent of Abdullah, and the name of his mother is Somanib, which is the equivalent of Amina. He is said to be taught by Bhagwan in a cave. Sikhs, who wear a unique turban on their head, are followers of another religion in India. But are there any hints about the Holy Prophet of Islam and his religion in the scriptures of Sikhs? In addition to the promise made thousands of years ago by Eastern religions concerning the advent of a prophet called Muhammad in Arabia, Abrahamic religions also foretell the arrival of a great prophet on earth in the last age of humanity.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you. with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. During this month of Sha'ban, the month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whisper prayer of Sha'baniya, or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniya. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Ilahi, lam yakun li hawlun fa antaqil bihi an ma'asiyatik illa fi waqtin ayqadtani li mahabbatik. وكما أردت أن أكون كنت فشكرتك بإدخالي في كرمك ولتطهير قلبي من أوساخ الغفلة عنك.
Dear brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the great whispered prayer of Sha'baniyya. Ilahi, lam yakun li hawlun fa antaqila bihi an ma'asiyatik illa fi waqtin ayqadhtani li mahabbatik. My Lord, I had no strength to desist from your disobedience, except when you awaken me for your love, except when you awaken me li mahabbatik, because of your love. Now, we have discussed different aspects of love and this relative term in the previous episodes. And for further elaboration, we can refer to the words of Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn, Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, in the supplication of Abu Hamza al-Thumali. Imam alayhi salam says, "By your might, O my master, even if you were to drive me away, I would not leave your door, and I would not cease to compliment you because of what I have come to know of your generosity and the vastness of your mercy. To whom can a servant go apart from his master? Whom can a creature seek refuge with other than his creator? O Allah, if you tied me with the chains of hell, O Allah, if you deprived me from among the people present on that day, your flowing streams of favors, and pointed out my scandals to the eyes of your servants, and ordered me to the fire, and separated me from the righteous ones, still I would not lose my hope in you, nor would I dismiss my anticipation of your pardon, nor would your love depart my heart." And this is so important when we consider the different levels of love that in the previous episode we discussed. We have different instances, different levels of loves. And yet you can see this level, you can imagine, there is no kind of love above which can be discussed.
Alhamdulillah, we have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. Hafaftahu bir rahmati wa ridwan. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat, and in one of his sayings he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams
And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat al-Sha'baniyyah, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat al-Sha'baniyyah is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
So this kind of love that is reflected in Abu Hamza al-Thumali, that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, "Oh Allah, even if you tied me with the chains of hell, even if you did so and so, I will not lose my love in you." This is the most pure and sincere form of love. This is the most sincere form of hope and aspiration, which does not depart from the heart of the servant of the Almighty Allah, even if he is tied up in chains, even if he is deprived of the favors of the Almighty Allah, even if his misdeeds disclosed by him before the people, he will not lose his hope. He will not lose his love of the Almighty Allah. Now, we will continue the study of these remarkable forms of loves and hopes described by Imam Ali alayhi salam in the supplication of Kumail, to see how Imam alayhi salam discusses these kinds of loves, the kinds of loves that have different kinds of effects in our lives. One effect is that they are awakening us. These kinds of loves that the servant feels, this is the cause of being awakened. This is the cause of being away from the kinds of sins that the Almighty Allah counts. Now, in the supplication of Kumail as well, we have different instances. When Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "By your might, O my master and my protector, I swear sincerely that if you were to leave me with speech, أُقْسِمُ صَادِقًا لَإِن تَرَكْتَنِي نَاتِقًا, I would lament before you from the midst of the inhabitants of the fire with the lamentation of the hopeful. I would try to cry to you with the cry of those crying for help. I would weep before you with the weeping of the bereft. I would call upon you, 'Where are you, O the sponsor of the believers? أَيْنَ كُنْتَ يَا وَلِيَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, O goal of the hopes of your knowers, and O aid of those who seek assistance, O friend of the hearts of the sincere, O Lord of the worlds.'" This is one instance. And Imam Ali alayhi salam continues describing this kind of love and its effects until when he says, "Far be it from you. This is not what is expected of you, nor what is well known of your grace, nor is it similar to the goodness and kindness you have shown to the ones who have professed your oneness." And Imam Ali alayhi salam at the end states, "So I declare with certainty that were it not for what you have decreed about punishing your deniers, and what you have decided about making those who stubbornly resist, you would have made the fire, all of it, cool and safe. And no one would have had a place, an abode in it. This is another instance of love that can be seen in the supplication of Kumail, as long as many other supplications and whispered prayers. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقلك أحبك يا شعبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقلك أحبك يا شعبان والعالم يقلك يا حبيب شعبان بجمالك شعبان شعبان يا شعبان يا شعبان أحبك يا شعبان يا شعبان أحبك يا شعبان
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha
IRIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
In the limelight.
The Silicon Valley Bank and its nearly $175 billion in deposits have been put under government control. It's the largest U.S. bank to fail since the 2008 financial crisis. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of CNBC has covered this story and tells us more. Financial regulators have closed Silicon Valley Bank and taken control of its deposits. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation announced on Friday, 10th of March, in what is the largest U.S. bank failure since the global financial crisis more than a decade ago. The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, a key player in the technology and venture capital community, leaves companies and wealthy individuals largely unsure of what will happen to their money. According to press releases from regulators, the California Department of Financial Protection and Innovation closed Silicon Valley Bank and named the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation as the receiver. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, in turn, has created the Deposit Insurance National Bank of Santa Clara, which now holds the insured deposits from SVB. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation said in the announcement that insured depositors will have access to their deposits no later than Monday morning. SVB's branch offices will also reopen at that time under the control of the regulator. According to the press release, SVB's official checks will continue to clear. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's standard insurance covers up to $250,000 per depositor per bank for each account ownership category. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation said uninsured depositors will get receivership certificates for their balances. The regulator said it will pay uninsured depositors an advance dividend within the next week, with potential additional dividend payments as the regulator sells SVB's assets. While the depositors with more than $250,000 ultimately get all of their money back, will be determined by the amount of money the regulator gets as it sells Silicon Valley assets, or if another bank takes ownership of the remaining assets. There were concerns in the technology community that until that process unfolds, some companies may have issues making payroll. As the end of December, SVB had roughly $209 billion in total assets and $175.4 billion in total deposits, according to the press release. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation said it was unclear what portion of those deposits were above the insurance limit. The last U.S. bank failure of this size was Washington Mutual in 2008, which had $307 billion in assets. Silicon Valley Bank was a major bank for the venture-backed companies, which were already under pressure due to higher interest rates and a slowdown for initial public offerings that made it more difficult to raise additional cash. The closure of Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, would impact not only the deposits but also credit facilities and other forms of financing. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation said loan customers of SVB should continue to make their payments as normal. The move represents a rapid downfall for SVB. On Wednesday, 8th of March, the bank announced it was looking to raise more than $2 billion in additional capital after suffering a $1.8 billion loss on asset sales. The shares of parent company SVB Financial Group fell 60% on Thursday, 9th of March, and dropped another 60% in pre-market trading on Friday, 10th of March, before being halted. CNBC's David Faber reported Friday morning that the efforts to raise capital had failed and that SVB had pivoted towards a potential sale. However, a rapid outflow of deposits was complicating the sale process. While many Wall Street analysts have argued that the struggles for Silicon Valley Bank are unlikely to spread to the broader banking system, shares of other mid-sized and regional banks came under pressure on Friday. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said during testimony before the House Ways and Means Committee on Friday morning that she was monitoring very carefully developments at a few banks. Janet Yellen made her comments before the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's announcement. Shortly after leaving Capitol Hill, Janet Yellen convened a meeting of top officials at the Fed, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the Comptroller of the Currency specifically to discuss the situation at the Silicon Valley Bank. The Associated Press has also covered the story and tells us more. Regulators rushed on Friday, 10th of March, to seize the assets of one of the Silicon Valley's top banks, marking the largest failure of a U.S. financial institution since the height of the financial crisis almost 15 years ago. Silicon Valley Bank, the nation's 16th largest bank, failed after depositors hurried to withdraw money this week amid anxiety over the bank's health. It was the second biggest bank failure in U.S. history after the collapse of Washington Mutual in 2008. The bank served mostly technology workers and venture capital-backed companies, including some of the industry's best-known brands. "This is an extinction-level event for startups," said Gary Tan, the chief executive officer of Y Combinator, a startup incubator that launched Airbnb, DoorDash, and Dropbox, and has referred hundreds of entrepreneurs to the bank. "I literally have been hearing from hundreds of our founders asking for help on how they can get through this. They're asking, do I have to furlough my workers?" There appeared to be little chance of the chaos spreading to the broader banking sector as it did in the months leading up to the Great Recession. The biggest banks, those most likely to cause an economic meltdown, have healthy balance sheets and plenty of capital. Nearly half of the U.S. technology and healthcare companies that went public last year after getting early funding from venture capital firms were Silicon Valley Bank customers, according to the bank's website. The bank also boasted of its connections to leading technology companies such as Shopify, ZipRecruiter, and one of the top venture capital firms, Andreessen Horowitz. Tan estimated that nearly one-third of Y Combinator startups will not be able to make payroll at some point over the next month if they cannot access their money. Internet television provider Roku was among casualties of the bank collapse. It said in a regulatory filing on Friday that about 26% of its cash, or $487 million, was deposited at the Silicon Valley Bank. Roku said its deposits with Silicon Valley Bank were largely uninsured, and it didn't know to what extent it will be able to recover those funds. As part of the seizure, California bank regulators and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation transferred the bank's assets to a newly created institution, the Deposit Insurance Bank of Santa Clara. The new bank will start paying out insured deposits on Monday. Then the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and California regulators plan to sell off the rest of the assets to make other depositors whole. There was unease in the banking sector all week, with shares tumbling by double digits. The news of Silicon Valley Bank's distress pushed shares of almost all financial institutions even lower on Friday, 10th of March. The failure arrived with incredible speed. Some industry analysts suggested on Friday that the bank was still a good company and a wise investment. Meanwhile, Silicon Valley Bank executives were trying to raise capital and find additional investors. However, trading in the bank's shares was halted before stock market's opening bell due to extreme volatility. Shortly before noon, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation moved to shutter the bank. Notably, the agency did not wait until the close of business, which is the typical approach. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation could not immediately find a buyer for the bank's assets, signaling how fast depositors cashed out. The White House said Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was watching closely what was happening at the bank. The administration sought to reassure the public that the banking system is much healthier than during the Great Recession. Our banking system is in a fundamentally different place than it was a decade ago, said Cecilia Ruse, chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisers. Cecilia Ruse added the reforms that were put in place back then really provide the kind of resilience that we'd like to see.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.